I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Lowe!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass.
Hello, the 42 members. Hope you're all keeping well at home. Part two of the greatest Irish 15 of the 21st century. Gavin Casey here in studio on Lee Side. I'm back home and I'm joined by my fellow Munster man, in provincial terms anyway, if not quite a biased supporter like myself, Murray Kinsley, who's in Waterford, I think. Actually, Murray, you might not be in Waterford and I might have to start again. Whereabouts in the world are you?
Yeah, I'm still in Waterford, same boat here, and I'm glad to hear you're back in Cork, nestled into the homeland where every Cork person feels far more comfortable. So I'm expecting fireworks from you today in the podcast. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. The danger, of course, of coming back to Cork is that you might never leave. It took an awful lot to venture up to Dublin 5 or 6 years ago, and I'm starting to get very comfortable. I'm starting to rediscover the accent that I have, say, when my mother calls me and I'm in the office and people can't quite understand what I'm on about. But yeah, it's been okay the last few days. Quite enough weekend. It's the new normal, I suppose. Trying to get to grips with it all. I don't sort of miss too much yet, apart from just spending time in person with friends and colleagues and people like that. But I don't really sort of know how it's going to go over the next weeks / months. How are you getting on over there at the moment?
Yeah, grand. Same as you. Kind of getting used to this being our modus operandi and how we work. Obviously, it was class having a bit of sunshine. I know it was tempting to go and flood the beaches and stuff, and I know some people probably did that. But even just to sit out in the garden and get a bit of that sun on the skin was lovely. And yeah, I think everyone's getting used to whatever Google Hangouts or Zoom or house party app or whatever they're doing to keep in touch. It's kind of cool to see people probably actually making more of an effort almost in that way, because it can be easy to kind of not always be in touch with people. But now that you're kind of bunkered into the house, you're maybe making that bit more effort on social media anyway and those kind of hangout places. But yeah, same as you, looking forward to getting back amongst people whenever that is, and sitting down for a nice pint somewhere in some nice pub. But yeah, tipping away and all's well here and everyone's healthy, so
super,
yeah, all good.
Super. Yeah, I don't miss the pub yet, but I definitely miss the option of it being there, particularly after a nice walk in the sun. But we'll make our return one day, no doubt about that. So just a recap for members, in case you missed the first episode of this three-part series, we did the front five, each of us. If you want to listen back to that, I'll give you a sort of a 3 or 4 second window to do that now before I list our front fives from that episode. Murray went for Cian Healy, Gerry Flannery, Tadhg Furlong, James Ryan, Paul O'Connell. And I selected Cian Healy, Keith Wood, Tadhg Furlong, James Ryan, and Paul O'Connell. So close enough to uniformity. And this is where it gets a little bit more difficult, possibly more interesting as well. We're going to do the back row and then half backs. We're going to start at number 6. I'm going to start with Murray. And he did tell me just before we came on the air here that he didn't know what he was going to say until we were recording live. So I'm excited to hear your answer, Murray. Who are you starting at 6 in this best team of the 21st century?
Yeah, well, like some of the front five sections I thought were fairly straightforward. But certainly going through this part of it was a little bit trickier, and you're kind of going, geez, I could flip a coin here. So yeah, I wanted to put myself under a bit of pressure to go with my gut maybe in a couple of the calls. Blindside, I ended up with Stephen Ferris in my team, and obviously Peter O'Mahony's achieved a whole lot. There was guys like Simon Easterby, Alan Quinlan who would deserve shout outs as well. Ferris's career was obviously shortened. He retired at what, 28, the age of 28 when he had to call quits through injury, and having had a large number of injuries before that as well. He only had 35 caps for Ireland in the end, which is really pitifully low kind of for a player of his quality, but he packed a whole lot of quality into that time, and had some sensational, stunning performances, obviously an integral role in the 2009 Grand Slam. He would have probably been the Lions starter that same year, but for that knee injury he got. I think it was Ryan Jones who came into the squad in his place. You think of him against Australia in the 2011 World Cup. You know, he was nominated for European Player of the Year for Ulster when they went to the Heineken Cup final in 2012 as well. And even was supposed to go off to Japan and play, actually, interestingly enough, but he didn't get that chance because of injury, and that was almost the story of his career at times. But when he played, like, what a force to be reckoned with. Incredible ball carrier, just a seriously athletic specimen, massive guy, really explosive, really powerful, never shirked a challenge, never backed down, really led by example in the tackle and in the carry and working hard in kick chase and things like that. He could also contribute, you know, around the line out and things like that. So he had a whole lot to his game, but just in terms of the sheer physicality of his game, I found it hard to overlook that. I don't think anyone else really could match that in terms of individual performance levels as a blindside flanker. And different players did different things, but I ended up with him there. Peter O'Mahony definitely has a great shout for it as well. Like, he's achieved a whole lot. Captaining his country a couple of times across 67 caps, obviously an important leader for Munster as well. He did captain Lions in the first test, and obviously that'll be remembered as almost a major disappointment of his career as well, because he gets dumped after that and Sam Warburton comes back in and O'Mahony doesn't play a part at all. But he's won a Grand Slam, he's beaten the All Blacks, having missed out on the first one in 2016, obviously. Won a couple of other Six Nations titles under Joe Schmidt, 2014-15. A truly, like, elite line-out player. I don't think we've ever had a back row with his line-out ability. That spring he has, that ability to read defences. He contributes so much around the breakdown as well, big turnovers and slowing the ball at other times. Probably wasn't quite as effective in the carry as other guys, although when he was younger and pre some of his injuries, particularly the knee, the ACL in 2015, I thought he had really good footwork. He was a lot better in that department, but that's probably tailed off a little bit more recently. But he's still playing away and really impressive in the couple of games or three games in this Six Nations this year. So he's definitely one of Ireland's best blindsides as well. But I just edged towards Ferris. What were you thinking on this front?
Yeah, I went the same way. I don't think there was much of a debate, to be honest. I know, say for example, I personally would have opted for Keith Wood over Gerry Flannery, because to my mind, even though we were dealing with the kind of a 3-year window for Wood in the, you know, from 2000 onwards, and for Flannery, it was like, to my mind, a case of what might have been nearly with the career. You could level at me that I'm not applying the same criteria here, in that Ferris's was obviously cut very short by injury as well, and O'Mahony has gone on to achieve brilliant things in nearly twice the number of caps. You had Easterby and Quinlan, as you say before, both Ferris and O'Mahony. But in a way, it's sort of similar to why I would have picked Wood, in that I think he's just the best we've ever had in that position, even if in Ferris's case it was over a short period of time. I think, similar to Wood, you could actually put Ferris in that team now and he wouldn't even need necessarily some of the massive advances in sports science and technology that have occurred over the last sort of 5 or 6 years. Like, he, again, similar to Wood, was I think a player for all eras, maybe to his detriment in the end, in the way that his career was cut short. But in terms of ability on either side of the ball, it's rare that you'd actually have a player anywhere in the back row that was capable of doing what he did. And I thought it was about as straightforward as most of the selections in the front five, to be honest. 35 caps, as you say, isn't a huge number, but what he did with those 35 caps was fairly extraordinary. And yeah, you could have, like, if he played into his 30s, you know, you're talking about it, he might well have been involved in many of the special nights that O'Mahony was. So yeah, I went for Ferris as well. That means we've got of the first six, we've agreed on five, so I think there's going to be a little bit of variation, hopefully, as we continue. But, well, I'm fairly happy that I'm along similar lines to yourself, to be totally honest. So, yeah, that's Ferris is your show. Ferris is my show. And I'd be surprised even if any of the listeners at home would have any serious protestations against that, I have to say. I think he's a guy who's just universally respected, really. I think part of it as well is that he's actually just an unbelievable character. Like, off the field, he's just such a gentleman, good crack. He's always had a bit of a personality that endeared himself probably to people from all of the provinces, whereas some people, even like O'Mahony, I think O'Mahony can be divisive in that, like down in Cork, in Munster, he's absolutely revered as this sort of snarling, cross man. Whereas in Leinster, maybe that doesn't quite wash with some of the people who feel like, oh, well, we're depending on him in, for supposed big moments in games, and they're coming too few and far between in a green jersey. Ferris, I think, was one of those guys who just, like, when he was in his prime, if you at home were picking an Ireland 15, he was one of the first guys on the team sheet. So for that reason and for other reasons, I'd go Ferris. Which way did you lean at seven? I found this very difficult, I have to say. Seven, open sight.
Yeah, this is so hard. This is one that I really bounce both ways with. I think we're both probably presuming. I'm presuming you're thinking O'Brien or Watts.
Yeah, that was probably the yeah. dilemma at the end. Yeah, but there were other options too.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys worth shouting. Like Dan Levy is obviously coming back from injury at the moment. I think he'll probably end up. He'll end up being considered in this bracket. I think if he can make that recovery. Keith Gleeson obviously did well to keep Wallace out of the teams, Ireland teams at times earlier in the 2000s. But for me, it's either Wallace or O'Brien. And at the moment, in my head, I'm leaning towards Sean O'Brien. It feels almost so harsh to not go with Dave Wallace because, you know, especially when I was growing up watching a player like him, he was just a phenomenal presence on the ball. Probably the best ball carrier Ireland have ever had, potentially. You know, Ferris obviously is up there as well, but Wallace was truly remarkable in terms of just the sheer fight he had. You know, a lot of guys, when they're carrying into contact, they maybe slow up or look to protect themselves or shield themselves, but he always accelerated right into that point of contact, and the leg drive was just remarkable to take him through most of the first up tackles, or certainly as I recall it now, and power on and using his fend, using that ability to balance through contact. It was just unbelievable. He was so quick as well. He actually started a game on the wing for Munster in 2005. As I just recall looking back over things, actually Dennis Leamy played in the centre a week later. Probably said a lot about Munster's back row quality. But Wallace, really, you could have played him in midfield as well and he would have been brilliant. He obviously was integral to Munster's successes, the heartbreaks first and then the successes, then Ireland's Grand Slam, and in 2009 with the Lions again, he was just hard to stop at times, even against the very best in the world. The reason I went with O'Brien, and again, he's probably a guy who, because of injury, we didn't quite get to see the very best of him on a consistent basis anyway. You know, 56 Ireland caps. He's still playing now. He just got back, actually, for London Irish before rugby stopped. I watched the game and he made two turnovers and thumped some people in tackles. He looked really good, actually. So he'll be frustrated with that. But like when he was at his best, he was rampaging as well. You think of the early part of his career when he was European Player of the Year in 2010-11. He was just very hard to stop on the ball, helping Leinster to those back-to-back titles and going on and just being a freak of nature for Ireland, winning global respect, really, especially the Kiwis. That's always one that stands out. They were always well aware of Sean O'Brien when they probably didn't know many of the rest of the players by name. He was a savage on the pitch for Ireland and Leinster at his very best. Really aggressive, a really kind of big mindset. Like, I don't know, maybe some Irish players in the past just didn't see themselves as the best in the world, but he always did, and it was infectious on guys, and is infectious on guys around him. He could carry, he could jackal, win turnovers. I think of that game when he came back from injury against the All Blacks and they lost in 2016. He'd missed out on Chicago and he comes back in Dublin. I think he made four clean turnovers, which, you know, even a clean turnover in the modern game is rare enough, but he was exceptional that day. He could offload, I think, in 2013, that beautiful offload against the All Blacks when Ireland were on top early on in the game. He clears out rucks like a freight train. I remember him clearing out four French players at one stage in a Six Nations game, and then dominant in the tackle. He always made those big, big plays. And again, for the Lions, he made such an impact, especially in 2017, having come back again from a lot of injuries. And like, I think Warren Gatland's been on the record saying he probably was his player of the series. I know John Davies won it, but O'Brien was exceptional at that again. So I just edge towards him, though it pains me to err against David Wallace. How did you end up on this big debate, I guess?
Yeah, it was a coin flip. I wound up going for Wallace on the basis, again, of probably just the length of time that he was quintessential to what Ireland did. And is part of it maybe just the nostalgia of it? Like, maybe. But we needed something. I mean, you're splitting hairs here anyway. All of what you said about Wallace and his ball-carrying ability was absolutely true. And maybe, to be fair, we can be guilty of, or at least I can be in this instance, maybe, of idealizing as well, where, like, all you can remember is him essentially mowing guys down or even finding space, like, with that pace that you mentioned. But one of the sort of things that sticks out to me as a memory about David Wallace, and even looking back at some of his stats, was, like, how incredibly prolific he was as well. And not only did he score tries, but he actually scored some incredibly important tries. Like, you think even at provincial level of that bonus point try well into the red in Thomond Park against Sale in 2006, which kind of sets Munster on their way. And there were so many of them over the years at international level as well. And I think it's one of those situations where Sean O'Brien, if you were to compare them, like, in a sort of a tail of the tape or look at all aspects of the game, O'Brien is the more complete player. But I just think what Wallace was in the era in which he was kind of makes him more special to my mind or something like that. It's like, I just think he was a real freak. And O'Brien, to be fair, like, wasn't far off that either. But you know, when you're talking about, like, how O'Brien sort of probably garnered more international acclaim, I think maybe that I don't know, maybe that was because, like, a lot of his attributes are kind of unusual, and as you say, he's a threat in nearly every facet. Wallace, like, maybe he was a little bit underappreciated. Like, the part of it is, like, the Kiwis and the people from Southern Hemisphere wouldn't have looked at Ireland in 2003, 2005, 2007 as being anything worth considering or anything even worth respecting. Like, I wonder if Ireland were capable of beating the All Blacks back then, like, would the Kiwis have looked at Wallace in a similar vein to O'Brien? I actually have a feeling that they might have, because on his day he was nearly unplayable the way O'Brien was. So, yeah, like, to be honest, I'm trying to pull some rationale out of my ass here, really. I really think it's a 50-50 call.
Yeah.
And I just lent towards Wallace for, probably a little bit of a nostalgia edged it for me. I know that's not ideal in terms of a selection criteria, but you got to go with something. And
And that kind of debate you're having there, even though we're in the 21st century, it is kind of two eras. And we'll, like, even when we come to out half, that's what you kind of have to do and weigh up how they made an impact in the game as it was then. I've no doubt that if Dave Wallace, let's say he was breaking through in 2008, 2009, the first part of his career, and with the advancement, say, in strength and condition, because he was an absolute freak show in the gym. But even now, it's obviously more modern, even more professional. Not that he wasn't, but I've no doubt that if he came around in this era, he'd be a world sensation, as you say. And even the number of games that are shown over New Zealand, etc., is very different. So that is the kind of tricky part of it, is comparing across the eras. And yeah, I think you do have to put them in their context rather than maybe going head to head at all times. So it is a tricky one to get that balance. And either of these guys is a very valid call.
Absolutely. On to number eight. So. And I thought there was a clear enough standout candidate here. What did you reckon? Who did you go with?
Yeah, Jamie Heaslip for me was a pretty straightforward choice. Remarkably durable until the very end. He had 95 caps, and then he definitely would have been well over 100. He wouldn't have been that pretty elite club, but it was probably his first real injury, wasn't it? The back one that forced him to retire. He made an impact for Lions 2009, 2013. He probably would have been on the 2017 tour, but for the injury. He had two nominations for World Player of the Year in 2009 and 2016. So that kind of says it all about the consistency and the ability to maintain his quality at such a high level for so long. A little bit like a man, he has plenty of people who probably didn't rate him, but I think every teammate who played with him knew exactly how important he was. Really intelligent player, very kind of glue-like in a team. He could jumping the line out. He could threaten at the breakdown. His carrying, offloading was good. He almost reinvented himself in a way, because when he first broke through, he was this kind of rampaging number eight. In the game as it was back then, that was perfect, but he kind of had to adapt and become a player who made other people look even better. Really solid head, obviously, and leader for Ireland as well. Good scrum control at the base. He could maul, he could tackle really well. Absolutely huge engine as well in terms of his fitness, and a CV to back it all up with his Heineken Cups and his Six Nations Grand Slams. So, yeah, he did it all really. There was obviously Anthony Foley is a really fond place in everyone's memory in terms of Irish rugby. And if you're talking about intelligence at number eight, there's not many with more than him. I don't think he was the best athlete ever, but he was always in the right place and thinking clearly and calmly, and just a really brilliant rugby brain. A couple other guys, maybe Victor Cosso, Eric Miller, there's fondness there for them, and a bit of that nostalgia as well, but they were excellent players in their own right. And CJ Sander more recently has made an impact, but I found it fairly straightforward going for Heaslip. What did you think?
Same as. I don't think there was much of a debate about this one. I think, yeah, probably the best number eight that's played the game for Ireland professionally. And he was an unbelievable professional as well in terms of like his game prep. You know, the length of time he went before really getting an injury that unfortunately curtailed his career. Like, you know, if you could actually imagine he's still playing in the Ireland team now, like if he was a couple of years younger, you know what I mean? He probably would have finished up in the interim, but he was just so, you've said it already about him, but the intelligence of him as a player, the way he was able to bring other players into the game, even when, say, he wasn't as capable of marauding and rampaging as he once was. He was very adaptable, read the game well, and you know, like it's an interesting one. If you look at the debate we've had about Ireland's number eight position over the last 12 months, again, I don't know that he would have been part of that debate had he remained fit and played on, but like it would have been maybe a different type of debate if we were coming off the back of another couple of years in which he occupied that jersey. So. Yeah, I thought that was a straightforward one. Again, some of the names you mentioned, like, very fondly remembered as well. And even with, I was actually speaking to somebody about Victor Costello only quite recently, you know, like, and it was such a random conversation. We were barely talking about rugby. It was more a case of like, do you know who I bumped into the other day? And it was fun even going back and thinking of Costello and his role at number eight for country and province. But yeah, Heaslip is the standout contender, I think, there. And I think pretty locked in. I don't think anybody would disagree with us there. So yeah, maybe it's time for him in the circumstances to finally start that podcast. I know the people.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely listen to it. I think he should just do it. I don't think anybody would protest in the current environment. It brings us to the halfbacks.
It could be about anything with him, though. It could be about anything. He's got a lot of different interests. Although I think he's come clean and admitted that he does really love rugby. And he was watching it all along.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it could be about anything. But there is a lot of space to fill, I think, at the moment. I mean, there's not a great deal of rugby to talk about. So yeah. You might as well talk about one of those other interests. Get Cian Healy on and talk about knives or something. I don't know. It brings us to halfback, and I think actually two very difficult selections, and I'm sure you'll agree with me. I'm going to ask you which way you went at scrum half first, but you know, if you want to tee it up with who maybe didn't quite make the cut for you in your starting 15, then work away.
I'm going to insist you go first this time, because I've been going first the whole time, and it's handy to sit there and listen and then refute it. So you go first.
Okay, I went with Conor Murray. Reasons being, I think in his prime he was the best in the world in his position. I think in his prime he managed games incredibly well. He still has the capability of doing that. He probably for a short period of time revolutionized what Ireland were doing just by way of being able to kick the ball the way he kicks it, and his overall impact, I think, on the Ireland team as well. was such that he would have been, along with maybe two or three other names, among the first to make Joe Schmidt's team for every single game over a prolonged period of time. And I don't think that right now he is the athlete that he used to be. I think somebody at some point has to make the call on it and say it, that like a guy who's 30 and has north of 80 caps at international level, Lions tests as well, and who plays the game as abrasively as he has played it throughout his career, there's a fair chance that you just lose that yard of space or yard of pace, and that you're just, you know, 85-90% of the athlete that you once were, and suddenly you're not world class anymore. Like, that would be the way I see Murray's career going at the moment. We're sort of waiting for him to reignite and rediscover that form of old. I don't know that it's there anymore, and I don't think it's his fault either. That's the thing. I'm not saying he's done anything wrong. It's just nature taking its course, to my mind. Now, that's probably a chat for another day. I know Bernard Jackman completely refutes that and did when I sort of broached it on a previous podcast. But while, like, say 2018 Conor Murray, was there a scrum half in the world as good as him? I don't think so at that time. And then, like, the other contender in this equation had a massive impact on Irish rugby, not only on the field, but sort of culturally, is a cult hero as well as an all-time great. But for all of the incredible ability he had, like, when you think of how well he could pass the ball, Peter Stringer, and you think of the tackles that he had absolutely no right to make, not only the ankle taps, but the bear hugs to take down front row forwards and second rows. And again, actually, his ability to manage a game and just that sort of understated leadership quality in him as well was absolutely quintessential. But if I was a coach and both of these guys were playing at the same time, which let's not forget they were for a period, I would have leaned towards Murray, partially because of the way the game was moving, in fairness, which is nothing to do with Stringer's sort of ability or form at the time. But I think Murray in his pomp was just a little bit more of a complete player, and for that reason I edged towards him in this one. Which way did you go, and Cian Faugh?
I was the same as you. Peter Stringer, again, you grew up watching the remarkable consistency of that pass, the speed of the pass, the lovely technique that he had, because obviously he was a shorter player and he was so low to the ground, he could pass straight off the deck. Conor Murray can't do that. And I think his passing is maybe a little bit underrated because his technique is different. He does become kind of more upright. He picks the ball off the ground and then passes. It's a different technique, but I think his passing is actually underrated. It's exceptional to me. I think people probably pick out the one or two dipping passes and maybe over focus on them, but over the years, again, the consistency he's had, essentially he's been first choice since 2011 for Munster in Ireland. It's an unbelievably long streak, and maybe that says a bit about the competition or lack of at times behind him, but he's been really peerless for that entire duration. Stringer didn't ever really get that Lions recognition and push on, but he had such an impact on Munster's successes, and he has that big iconic moment in 2006 against Biarritz, sniping off the scrum. What a moment, like unforgettable in Irish rugby history. And as you say, he was a very game defender. Those tap tackles, we mentioned the Dan Lugar one recently in 2001, and you mentioned the professionalism of some guys, Heaslip in particular. Like Stringer now, it's actually a humbling experience and depressing, actually, meeting him even now, because he's in such good nick. He's a sensational trainer, like treats his body like a temple and just is absolutely ripped off his head. Played on till he was 40, obviously, and played really well as well, and kept doing that perfect kind of core scrum half role that he provided, speed of pass. Some people value that more than anything. I think Murray does give you that as well, but for me, he's a more complete nine. As you say, best kicking nine in the world at his best. Best defender at nine, I think we've seen, maybe. Mike Phillips obviously brought a lot of that with his size. And Murray at 6'2", 95 kg, he brought that as well again. He hasn't been as good sniping recently, but again, when I think of him at his best, 14 tries for Ireland, he's well able to use that large frame to snipe, finish from close range, make breaks. You think of All Blacks 2016 when he dummies and goes. I just think he's a little bit more of a complete, rounded player. And though the recency kind of bias maybe will have some people kind of counting against him, I think at his very best he was brilliant and could still get back there. I still think that, you know, he's not that far off it. I do think he's declined away, obviously, since 2018. But and certainly there are some maybe question marks over the physical side. I think that's valid what you said there. But I think he's been pretty solid still and has a really good winning record with Ireland. Obviously, frustrations not to have done the same with Munster in more recent years. But again, he'll feel at 30 that he has plenty of time left to do even more and maybe kind of copper fasten his claim as Ireland's best.
Absolutely. There definitely is scope for him to build upon the legacy that he's already going to leave behind whenever he does step away. I wonder just the fact that it just got me thinking when you mentioned that Stringer didn't quite get the Lions recognition. How big do you think the 2013 Lions tour was in Murray's ascent towards the player that he did become, when he was kind of an understudy really to Mike Phillips, who would have been like the prototype Conor Murray, without meaning to disrespect Phillips, a phenomenal player in his own right. But, you know, that guy, that 6 foot plus scrum half, which was a bit of an anomaly at the time, who brought just an enormous physicality to the position. I remember Murray coming on in that third test against Australia and he teed up, I think it was Jamie Roberts for a try when the game was already won. And it nearly seemed to be a passing of the baton in a way between Phillips and Murray, even though they weren't teammates at international level. Murray kind of went on to become that type of scrum half and probably even better Phillips in terms of his international standing. Would a Lions tour make that much of a difference to a player at that juncture in their careers when they're quite young, getting to train alongside somebody like Phillips, like who was more experienced but probably played the game in a vaguely similar way?
Yeah, it certainly did. Conor Murray would tell you that himself. As well as Phillips, who was the coaches he was exposed to, Neil Jenkins, obviously a brilliant kicking coach, but also Rob Howley, who was a brilliant scrum half and worked quite closely with Murray. And probably the box kicking element of his game came around at that time. Joe Schmidt obviously came into Ireland and saw this, I suppose, a gap, something that he could exploit in international rugby. And in Conor Murray, he had the perfect person to master the craft, and that's what Conor Murray did. Like, you talk about people changing the game, and Conor Murray, without being dramatic about it, probably did do that to a large extent with the sheer accuracy, the height he could get in his box kick, the calm kind of unfussy approach he would have around the ruck, whereas other scrum halves would get a bit frantic and maybe get blocked down. He just brought this very composed, kind of languid style to it and hung the ball up for Ireland to use those wingers to win the ball back. 2014-15, he was at his peak. Everyone kind of started copying it. I remember actually reading an interview with Wayne Smith, the New Zealand kind of professor of rugby, and he said everyone had started to try and copy the Northern Hemisphere teams, but he had figured out if he didn't have Conor Murray or Ben Youngs in his team, he wasn't going to allow them to box kick because they couldn't actually do what Conor Murray was doing. So he definitely shifted the game. I know some people probably think that's for the worse because they hate box kicking, but he was very influential in that. And certainly in how nines were used as well. Like, long gone are the days where scrum halves just kind of did the sweeping role in behind or almost were hidden at times. He's spent most of his career in the line making quite important tackles and being a big part of that. More recently, he's been positioned in the backfield to within Ireland's system, kind of helping out the fullback. But he's probably, again, changed how coaches see their nines as people who can actually make a difference in defence. And even the smaller guys now, like Faf de Klerk and all the Welsh nines as well, you're seeing them being those shooters and having a bit of free role and freedom and not just hanging out behind the defensive line and waiting. So I think Murray was part of all that. Obviously, that's down to coaching as well, but he was the perfect kind of player to take that on. And I'd say a lot of it did start with that 2013 Lions tour and then starting to work with Joe Schmidt.
Yes, it's been a phenomenal few years for him. And as you say, hopefully a few more years to come as well. And he, you know, I don't think there was a great deal of debate about that particular selection, but if we're doing this again in 10 years' time, there might be even less yet. His partner then at halfback, I should point out that you got an email about this actually from a gentleman. Hold on, I'll bring it up here.
this is a warning who to pick.
Yes, Owen Murphy. He was saying, looking forward to hearing your team. I don't want to see any nonsense about Sexton getting in ahead of Rog. Too inconsistent off the tee. Which is incredibly harsh, I think. I wonder where Owen is from. Which way did you lean? I have to say again, found this particular selection incredibly difficult. Not as straightforward as one might think, on the basis that Sexton was a World Player of the Year and you know, was arguably the best out half in the world for a couple of years, which there are heights that Rog never really scaled. But I just found there were so many other ways to qualify a Rog selection. Which way did you go, firstly?
Yeah, they're massive, I guess, plus points in both ways. I ended up leaning towards Johnny Sexton, have to say. And I mean, that's literally by inches, you know what I mean? If you're measuring it, it's such a hard call, because again, we go back to that kind of difference of eras and difference of what their responsibilities when in teams were. Like Ron O'Gara, for the Munster and Ireland teams he played for, was really a perfect player. There's nothing really to call him up on. Obviously, not the biggest defender, but he was brave. He put his body in the way. Didn't always make the tackles against guys who were twice the size and weight and power of him, but was game, like an unbelievable competitor. I think kicking-wise, really unrivaled, I would say, in terms of what he could do with his spiral kicking. At the time, that was obviously a massive part of it. So accurate, so consistent, would drain opposition teams of morale, really turning and watching the ball dribble into the corner off the tee. Obviously exceptional. He's the fourth highest point scorer of all time in the sport, behind only Dan Carter, I think Johnny Wilkinson and Jenkins, who we've just mentioned. And 128 caps obviously for Ireland is remarkable, really, especially considering that Sexton was there for the latter part of O'Gara's career. He was also really brilliant at drop goals as well. If we're talking about kicking, the 2009 Grand Slam, obviously the peak of that on the international stage, but I think he hit 16 of them for Ireland and regularly did it for Munster as well. And then his passing game, I think, is probably underrated, actually. He would really rip those skip passes. Just a beautiful amount of pace and accuracy, and he made so many people, including Brian O'Driscoll outside him, look really good with that passing game. And it's probably forgotten because his kicking was so exceptional. As you say, maybe it didn't develop onto that global stage and the Three Lions tours he went on. Probably don't have the happiest memories. He'll be remembered probably for the 2009 one where he gives away that penalty and Morne Stein kicks it to win it for the box. But he was an exceptional international player. The reason I guess I veered towards Sexton, like his record, he has even more titles in terms of winning the four Highland Cups with Leinster, four Pro 14 titles, his own Grand Slam with Ireland where he was really the main figure, and 2014-15 Six Nations titles as well. He did start in 2017 it took a test to get into that starting team, but he was an integral figure in them turning it around and drawing with the All Blacks, and then he drove the 2013 Lions to this test series success in Australia. Similar kind of attitude, just being the central figure, fiery, demanding, ultra competitive, kind of quite cranky on the pitch. I think his kicking game, while not quite maybe at Rogers' level, is beautiful out of hand. Off the tee, I think I'd definitely go for O'Gara every time with the game on the line, because again, you remember those big moments where he held his nerve and seemed to thrive in it, having probably come through the disappointment of 2000 with Munster when he missed a couple in that final. And Johnny Sexton's probably had a few wobbles himself as well, obviously even more recently as well off the tee, but he has his Grand Slam drop goal moment as well in France. I think his vision and his passing game and then his running threat is just a little bit more than probably Rog had. He's very robust in contact as well, and defensively one of the very best out halves I've seen in defending. He's really brave. Obviously he goes quite high and people criticise that at times, but just the energy and the line speed he brings, and then he has made a lot of strips and tackles and things like that as well. I just felt he just had that edge because of the quality of his defence. But I mean, I'd have no issues with Ron O'Gara being in any all-time team either.
I should stress I made the decision before I landed down in Cork, but I leaned the same way. I went for Sexton. I think a lot of the, say, players from the previous era that I've selected and that you've selected in the team, well, for me, say, the likes of Wallace, and I would use the same justification for Keith Wood, was like, you know, those guys could, you know, with a little bit of a sprinkling of the advances of modernism, like those guys could slot into a team now and do absolute damage. And I think if you were to reverse engineer Sexton and drop him into that previous era, if you like, of like the early 2000s, even mid 2000s, just before he came on the scene, I still think he'd be an absolutely formidable player, albeit probably shy of a few kg. Like his style of play, even though Rog would edge him definitely in terms of tactical kicking, I think there would have always been a place for a player like Johnny Sexton on a rugby pitch, even going back decades. And I do think, look, I know I sort of like, I said earlier that Sexton was a world player of the year and Rog maybe didn't quite get to that level internationally, but there were still means of getting Rog into the team and justifying it, I think, to an understandable degree. But it is hard to ignore a guy who literally was voted the world's best player at a given time. And when you combine that with the trophies that he did win. Yeah, I mean, look, now the trophies, you can say that had Rog been playing with this current Ireland crop, that it might have been something similar. But I don't know. It'd be hilarious in a few years' time to sit them both down and say, like, you know, who do you think was the better player? Because I think both of them would tell you that they were, even though Rog would doubtless acknowledge that Sexton was better, like in terms of just a broken field threat, and physically, defensively, things like that. I was glad you mentioned Rog's pass. Like, the guy, it was just taken for granted, I think, because it was routine to him, you know. But like his skip passes, but even just the sort of speed and rhythm with which he'd pass the ball to a second receiver, you know, there was never any kind of fuss about it, but it was always exactly where it needed to be. And it's funny, like, you know, imagine the damage, like, these eras that we're talking about are somewhat cyclical, and imagine the damage Rog could do with like a 50-20-22 rule. Well, you know, like, it's funny just to think, like, it's nearly coming back around to a situation in which what Rog was better than, I would say, anybody else in the world at, will now possibly become this massively integral and hugely advantageous part of the game for teams again. So
or even think of the line speed now, that's so predominant in every aspect of it. You think of Twickenham this year, only a few weeks ago really, and Ireland struggles to try and get around the defence. You think of him with his variety of kicking, because it wasn't just the spirals, he was brilliant at all sorts of little dinks and chips, and diagonals. He would have loved to have that challenge, because that was coming into the game a little bit more when he was around, but not to the scale it is now. So it would have been fascinating to see him and loads of other guys play in the current game.
Absolutely. That's it, so. We've both gone Sexton there. We've both gone Murray. Apologies to Owen Murphy, who emailed you. We've apparently, I suppose,
he's going to be
devastated. as I'd imagine a lot of people will be down in and around this area. But look, you got to make the call based on good faith, I think. And we've done that so far with our front fives or second fives. That leaves back fives, which we're going to come to on Wednesday. We'll round it off. And then, it seems as though we're going to have plenty of scope and time to produce hashtag content over the next few weeks and months. So we'll go back into that members WhatsApp group and peruse some of the ideas that they put in there recently. Thank you very much for that, Murray. Very enjoyable.
Cheers. Very enjoyable again.
And we'll catch you on Wednesday. We've got a regular pod as well coming up on Thursday. We'll have more information about that on Wednesday's members pod when we round off this best Ireland 15 of the 21st century. So until Wednesday, stay well, everybody. Hope all of your families and friends and all of those close to you are keeping well as well. And in the meantime, you know, look after yourselves. We'll catch you in a couple of days' time.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
If you're working as an accountant and you lose your job, nobody really notices.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moe!
Rugby Weekly.
Little reverse pass, and oh! Drive!